Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for finding us. Stick around tonight. I had to, at the last minute, I had to trash everything that I was going to talk about tonight in lieu of three breaking stories and kind of an overview of what may be going on, may not be going on. If you are familiar with tinfoil hats, you know, you get it out tonight if you want to, although I don't think we're going to get to that level on the program. There's something very interesting going on. We have this tremendous dog and pony show that's been occurring over the past several months of the Democrats trying to select their nominee to be president. And on the one hand, it's been very entertaining, hasn't it? Huh? It really has. It's been very entertaining. People who hate Obama in the Hillary camp, people who hate Clinton in the Barack camp, have had a chance to really get down to some visceral levels. The kind of stuff that you would expect to be directed somewhere else other than in a political contest, the outcome of which probably doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of difference. Not that Obama and Clinton aren't different in their approach to problem solving, because that's what they're going to have, 4 years or 8 years of problem solving. But because they're not really going to be in control. You and I know that as well as we know that we're both sitting here playing radio, okay? It doesn't make any difference who's elected. It really doesn't on that level. Now, can either of these nominees for president, once they get there, can they use the bully pulpit to try to turn things around, try to influence public opinion? Sure. Sure, they can do that. But to the extent necessary to make changes, they won't. Not because they're bad people, but because they can't. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but I assume you have. Whether or not we elect candidate A from party A or candidate B from party B really is kind of irrelevant at this point. And that's true whether we're operating on the congressional level or the executive branch level. It really does not matter that much. Are there differences in the margins? Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. Would John Edwards have provided a health care plan much more comprehensive from Hillary Clinton's? Absolutely. Would Barack Obama institute a foreign policy different from Dennis Kucinich's? Absolutely. But the overarching truth of all of this stuff is, to an enormous degree, it doesn't really matter anymore. Now, I can get all feel-goody inside about the nomination of Barack Obama on a number of levels, and I've tried to explain that over the past few nights since Tuesday. What he represents, not just to America, but to the subdivisions in America, white America, black America, immigrant America, young America, racist America, not racist America. So there's a really resonating feel-good element about Barack Obama's nomination, if you open yourself up to it. Now, I realize some people can't. They are so bound up in racism, or so bound up in fear, or so bound up in whatever they're bound up in. I don't know. The list can be endless. That they can't any longer open themselves up to feel, damn, what was that? That's hope. Oh, is that what that is? But it really doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't. When did it stop mattering? Probably with the assassination of John Kennedy. That's probably when it stopped mattering. Now, that was a long time ago, right? That was a long time ago. What was that? 45 years ago? Not so long. 45 years ago. This, by the way, is the night 40 years ago that Robert Kennedy was murdered in Los Angeles. And this was a year that earlier this the spring was a year that Martin Luther King was murdered in Memphis. So if someone pressed me to say, well, when did it stop mattering? Oh, wise ass talk show host, I would say probably with the assassination of John Kennedy. And I don't even know about before that. I date it from that because of the profound changes this country had to go through with his death, and also the fact that that was my birth, my political birth, was the assassination of John Kennedy, my awareness. That's when I woke up out of a 21-year-long coma and said, oh, what's this? So what I'm going to do tonight is different from what we've normally done on this program. You may find it interesting. You may listen for a few minutes and say, screw this, and go watch television or do something else. Either way is okay with me. Because, again, the overarching reality that I think most of us are missing, because, you know, denial is not just a river in Egypt, is the fact that none of this stuff really matters. I get inspired by Barack. I can make jokes about Hillary. I can check their records, as I've said, and say, well, I think I'll go with this candidate because that one, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, I can scream and rant and rave about the making their trips in front of AIPAC and this little avenue that turns into a cul-de-sac and a dead end, and that little avenue, politically speaking, that turns into a cul-de-sac or a dead end, or this little glimmer of hope that invariably is dashed against the pavement. Have you noticed that? How many things, really think about this for a second, how many things have you really gotten enthused about? I'm talking about things that affect all of us, you know, the big things. How many things have you gotten enthused about in the past 15 years, and especially the past 8? And you know, you grab hold, and it's all shiny and bright and feels smooth and warm in your hand, and you think, ah, damn, look at this. And then, yunk, it either falls apart, or you take another look, and it's not really shiny and bright. It's kind of rusty, and, oh, my God, you just cut your hand on it, and, you know, oh, and you toss it away and reach for the next shiny, bright thing if it comes along. How many times does that happen? And I'm not talking about possessions. I'm talking about when you get those glimmers of hope, and then what happens? Well, the trade centers get taken down. Oh, God. Or, maybe a little hope. What happens? We start bombing the Christ out of a country that has done nothing to us. Oh, okay. Then a little glimmer of hope. Maybe, and then what? We find out that we have become a torture nation. Then we find out that our votes don't count. And then we find out, well, I'm going to quote extensively from an issue of Radar magazine tonight that is going to, if you stick around, and again, if you don't want to, that's okay. I understand. You know, there's no entry fee to come in here. The gate swings both ways. Come in, listen well. If you don't like it, adios. See you tomorrow night. But I'm going to quote extensively from an article in Radar magazine that will either make you chuckle and think, Jesus Christ, what's wrong with these people? Or kind of snap your head back. And there's a prelude to this. There are three stories that broke today that kind of tie in with the Radar story. And that's what happened. This kind of moment occurred along about 7 o'clock tonight, 6 o'clock tonight Eastern Time, when I looked at these three breaking stories and then this thing from Radar, and I went, oh, God, this is one of those moments, and I've got to focus on it. So no phone calls. We're going to have Ian block the lines. And again, we may get to phone calls tonight. We may not. But stick around. I hope you do. And if you reach a point in what I'm going to do tonight where you say, to hell with this, I understand. We'll be back and get this started in a moment. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Threatening, you're beating ground shaking. You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. Let me begin this by saying there is, it finally is, I think, very clear that there is a strong probability, not possibility, but probability. Matter of fact, the decision may have already been made of an attack by this country and probably Israel. And I don't know, maybe the UK, although I know for sure the United States and Israel, an attack on Iran. It is coming as surely as tomorrow morning is coming. Hell, it may even be tomorrow morning. Who knows? But in addition to that, and I believe the war plans are drawn up and ready to go, there is also the kind of hideous, sickening reality of what's going to happen in this country when that attack commences. And the response to the demonstrations that will occur in this country from the anti-war folks, the response by the Bush crime family. It's going to be swift. It's going to be absolute. It's going to be totalitarian. But let's begin, then, with what happened today. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has forced out Air Force Secretary Michael Wynn, the civilian, and Air Force Chief of Staff General Michael Mosley, the military. These two guys run, or did until today, the United States Air Force. Gates said that the reason they were fired is because these two officials failed to ensure the security of, as he puts it, sensitive materials. A double firing like this is very unusual. It doesn't happen that often when you get the military leader and the civilian leader of one of the branches of the United States military. Gates said his decision was based mainly on the conclusions, the damning conclusions, is the way the Associated Press puts it, of an internal report on the mistaken shipment to Taiwan of four Air Force electrical fuses for ballistic missile warheads. And the other slip-up, the startling incident last August of a B-52 bomber that flew across the United States armed with six nuclear-tipped cruise missiles. Now, the report that Gates asked for and authorized drew the stunning conclusion that the Air Force's nuclear standards have been in a long, slow decline, what the report referred to as, quote, a problem that has been identified but not effectively addressed for over a decade, end quote. Gates said that these incidents indicate, quote, a decline in the Air Force's nuclear mission focus and performance, end quote, and a failure by Air Force leaders to respond effectively. Now, it's reported that Gates spoke in somber tones. He told reporters the decision to remove these two was based on the findings of this investigation, and the tandem investigation. It was actually two investigations in one, the nuclear weapons that were transported across the country under no authorization by anyone, and then the sending of these triggers, these electrical fuses, to Taiwan. The report is classified, and what Gates provided today was an oral summary of the points that he figured the general public has a right to know, even though we were all taught in school that Gates works for us, and the money to write the report and build the bombs comes out of our pockets, but that is very quaint and doesn't matter anymore. Now, it's worth mentioning here that General Michael Mosley was the commander of coalition air forces during the initial invasion of Iraq in March of 2003. He then became Air Force Chief of Staff in September 2005. And the other guy, the civilian guy, the Secretary of the Air Force, is a former General Dynamics executive who took office in November 2005. It's important to know the immediate history of these two. Both of them issued their own statements after they were fired. Mosley, the general, said, quote, as the Air Force's senior uniformed leader, I take full responsibility for events which have hurt the Air Force's reputation or raised a question of every airman's commitment to our core values, end quote. Wynn, the former General Dynamics executive in the civilian, said he, quote, read with regret, end quote, the findings of the report. Read with regret. Now, kind of the subtext to this is the fact that I think it's well known at this point throughout the military and those of us in the civilian world who pay attention, certainly in the branches of government that need to know this stuff, that the Air Force has been taken over by Christian religious fundamentalists. Real wackos. I mean, really, really, really crazy people who see their mission. These Christian fundamentalists who now have taken over the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs and in some of the highest ranking offices of the Air Force, these people see their mission as to trigger Armageddon. Because after all, this is what Jesus wanted or God wanted or some fairy in the sky wanted. And it's their mission to bring this to fruition so that the Lord and Savior of these freaks, Jesus Christ, will come back and make everything wonderful for the true believers. You have to bear this in mind, that the United States Air Force is owned and operated by the Christian fundamentalists who are 1,000 times worse than any Muslim fundamentalist could ever be. You know why? Because the Christian fundamentalists at the Air Force have the means to deliver their nuclear bombs. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everybody's smoking, and no one's getting high. Everybody's flying, and never touch the sky. There's UFOs over New York, and I ain't too surprised.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe
it's 26 before the hour. Okay, the firing of the top two Air Force personnel, one military and one civilian today by Robert Gates and his reasons. The second event today that is freaky. Certainly within the past 24 hours, the Senate Intelligence Committee has released its report that has been hidden, delayed. A couple of members of this committee, Republican and Democrat, tried to kill it, tried to keep it from the public. It finally got out. And the conclusion is that Bush and Cheney knowingly, lied to Congress and the public about the threat that Iraq posed to the United States in the months leading up to the Bush's invasion. And a second report, and Jason Leopold at ConsortiumNews.com has this for you. A second report said former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld set up an intelligence office within the Defense Department known as the Office of Special Plans, which we all know about, quote, without the knowledge of the intelligence community or the State Department, end quote. And the purpose of that was to promote the lies that said there was a link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, promote the lies with cooked intelligence about Iraq's weapons cache that just magically disappeared because it was never there. Now, that office, the Office of Special Plans, was headed by Douglas Feith, former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy and a chief architect of the Iraq War. You can also bet your ass that Admiral John Poindexter was involved in it. Remember him? Amazing how he's just disappeared off the radar scope, right? So, trust me on this. Poindexter was in this up to his eyeballs. Now, the committee chairman, John D. Rockefeller IV, a Democrat of West Virginia, who did everything in his power to kill this report, to keep it from the public, said today, quote, as though he was Saul on the road to Damascus, he said, quote, before taking the country to war, this administration owed it to the American people to give them a 100% accurate picture of the threat we faced. Unfortunately, our committee has concluded that the administration made significant claims that were not supported by the intelligence, end quote. See, I would love to see just once one of these cowardly Democrat bastards come out and say, look, here's the evidence. They lied. They lied. Now, the Senate report, and this is disgusting. This is disgusting. This really is disgusting. This Senate report is the first document to state that Bush and Cheney knowingly lied about the threat posed by Saddam Hussein. After everything that everybody has known all along, we've all known this. This is the first Senate report that says, P.S., the bastards lied. Now, I'm not impugning John Rockefeller IV's motives. Maybe he didn't want this report out because of the shock, the horror, that the families of the 4,100 Americans who have died in this conflict will probably feel when they find out that their loved one died on the basis of filthy goddamn lies put out by these two neo-Nazis. And then again, like I said earlier, denial is not just a river in Egypt. It is also an enormously successful ego defense mechanism. So maybe the families who have contributed 4,100 Americans to this slaughter, this useless, pointless slaughter, will find refuge in that denial. I don't know. Were it I, and I found out that my son or my daughter had been killed in a conflict instigated by liars like this, I don't know what I would do. But I guarantee you it would be illegal. Rockefeller said in a statement, he went on to say, quote, "There is no question we all relied on flawed intelligence." You're out of your mind. You are out of your mind, Senator. There was no flawed intelligence. Anybody with the sense God gave a bag of doorknobs could have seen what was going on, including you, numbnuts. So don't call it flawed intelligence. He went on to say, but there's a fundamental difference between relying on incorrect intelligence and deliberately painting a picture to the American people that you know is not fully accurate. End quote. If that's the case, Mr. Rockefeller, and you on the Senate Intelligence Committee, how long have you been sitting on this information and what have you done with it? You have been complicit. You are a co-conspirator, Mr. Rockefeller. But I digress. The Senate report confirms British intelligence assertions that came about in that document widely known as the Downing Street Memo. Remember that? That the facts against the threat posed by Iraq were being fixed around the Bush administration's desire to invade Iraq. Bush's desire to invade Iraq. Cheney's desire. Rumsfeld's desire to invade Iraq. The report singled out what is referred to as erroneous statements. When it concerns the death of hundreds of thousands of people, those are goddamn lies that Cheney made during the run-up to the war and that Cheney knew they were lies. John Dean, former counselor to Nixon, made a case for impeaching Bush if he intentionally misled Congress and the public into going to war with Iraq, which is what the Senate Intelligence Committee report today, released today, absolutely, irrevocably states as fact. Way back in 2003, in a column for FindLaw.com, John Dean wrote, quote, "To put it bluntly, if Bush has taken Congress and the nation into war based on bogus information, he is cooked," end quote. He went on to say, Dean did, quote, "manipulation or deliberate misuse of national security intelligence data, if proven, could be a high crime under the Constitution's impeachment clause. It would also be a violation of federal criminal law, including the broad federal anti-conspiracy statute, which renders it a felony." However, Nancy Pelosi says impeachment is off the table. So that's story number two. Story number three. This comes from two sources, from the Washington Post and from an Israeli publication, the Jewish Telegraph Agency, JTA. It's an online, you can find it online, jta.com. Dan Frumkin, writing in the Washington Post yesterday. mentions the fact that there was a meeting yesterday, and I think he's still in town. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, not in town, but in the U.S., met with Bush, and Olmert is pushing Bush into war, into an attack on Iran. As Dan Frumkin writes, both Olmert and Bush are badly wounded and looking for salvation. Olmert is facing corruption allegations that could drive him from office. Bush is wildly unpopular, desperate to salvage his legacy, and fighting irrelevance as the general election in this country begins in earnest, even with the Republican candidate trying to keep him at a distance. In this environment, it's in this environment that the Jewish Telegraph Agency reports, quote, Ehud Olmert will urge President Bush to prepare an attack on Iran. Citing sources close to the Israeli prime minister, the newspaper, and I'm going to mispronounce this, Yediot Akrono, reported on his front page yesterday that Olmert, who is due to hold closed-door talks with Bush in Washington, will say, quote, time is running out. End quote. According to the newspaper, Olmert will tell Bush, quote, the United States should therefore prepare to attack Iran. And Olmert certainly telegraphed as much the other night. Maddie Friedman writes for the Associated Press that, quote, the Israeli prime minister told thousands of Israel supporters at the annual convention of the pro-Israel AIPAC American Israel Public Affairs Committee on Tuesday that the Iranian threat, quote, must be stopped by all possible means, end quote. In quoting Maddie Friedman again for the Associated Press, quote, Olmert said international sanctions aimed at stopping Iran from developing nuclear weapons must be ratcheted up. Olmert said, but sanctions are only an initial step, and Iran's flouting of the international measures so far, quote, leave no doubt as to the urgent need for more drastic and robust measures, end quote. And AFP, the French news agency, reports, quote, Israel will not tolerate the possibility of a nuclear Iran, and neither should any other country in the free world, the premier said. That's what Olmert said. Tim Butcher writes in the Telegraph of the UK, quote, the speech shortens the odds significantly on military action against Iran's nuclear program. Israel has twice acted by itself to stop its regional enemies developing a nuclear capability. And Tim Butcher points out that Olmert's words echoed those used by Bush in a speech last month to the Israeli parliament in which he said the free world had a duty to stop Iran. More when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. So back to the story as reported by the Washington Post and also Jewish Telegraph Agency in Israel. Ehud Olmert's meeting with Bush yesterday and today, I believe, a closed door out of the scrutiny of the public because that's the way it's handled in a corporatist dictatorship. Cheney and Olmert and the necessary people there are working on chuckle nuts, and it probably doesn't take much, to get him to launch a full-scale attack on Iran. Now, there's going to be a response to that. There is no question there's going to be a response to that. So in military tactics, I've been told, or I have read, that the quickest way to minimize the attack, or the response, is to make the attack overwhelming, so that any response that is still capable of being launched, if you pardon the word, will be one that is ineffectual at best and just kind of a gasp at worst. That's the way you attack a country. So back to what is being reported. A particular irritant, according to the Washington Post, to Mr. Omerit and others who support this attack against Iran is last year's National Intelligence Estimate. Remember that one, which reported that Iran ended its nuclear weapons program 4 years ago? Remember that? Now, that document made an unprovoked U.S. attack on Iran's nuclear facilities back then politically impossible. And Bush has been trying to recast that intelligence estimate by focusing on its findings that Iran continues its nuclear enrichment program. But writing for Haaretz in Israel, Barak Ravid writes, quote, Olmert will try to convince Bush to set aside his own national intelligence estimate on Iran's nuclear program in favor of data presented by Israel, and to then determine the administration's policy on Iran accordingly. So the effort will be made on this dumb bastard in the White House to say, look, 13 of your intelligence agencies told you there's no there there. But here, look at this. This is from the Israeli intelligence agency. Set aside yours, go with ours, attack Iran. And you can see Bush at that point just kind of drooling. At yesterday's press briefing, Dana Perino confirmed as much, saying, quote, Israel has made it clear that they think that intelligence is wrong and that Iran is still pursuing a nuclear weapon, end quote. I don't know if too much cappuccino Perino has a clue of what she's talking about, but it's out there for the public to absorb or ignore, and most of us will ignore it. Again, according to the Post, administration critics, that would be, oh, I don't know, people in Congress, people in the military establishment, certain talk show hosts, administration critics, who in this case represent almost the entire foreign policy establishment, minus the neocons, warned that an attack on Iran will backfire even more spectacularly than the invasion of Iraq. Well, you can take that one to the bank, truth seekers. Iran is not a broken country coming out of 12 years of sanctions after a brutal, murderous attack that left their entire army dead. No, that's not Iran. That's not Iran at all. But the Post says, nevertheless, Vice President Cheney appears to be on the war path, pushing, if not for a preemptive U.S. strike, then for an Israeli attack on Iranian nuclear facilities or U.S. airstrikes on suspected training camps for Iraqi insurgents within Iran. He's still beating that drum. Either of which would provoke a protracted U.S. military campaign. Why, yes, it would. Now, according to the conventional wisdom, Condoleezza Rice has been holding Cheney at bay. But as Helene Cooper and Isabel Kirshner write in the New York Times, Rice, quote, escalated the Bush administration's anti-Iran rhetoric on Tuesday, accusing its government of pursuing nuclear weapons. Rice is saying this, and calling any dialogue with its leaders pointless. Now, it's reported that while Condoleezza Rice's message was familiar, the tone of her speech before AIPAC was unusually sharp and taking a bleak aim at Barack Obama and other Democratic leaders who have called for the United States to engage Iran diplomatically. These sons of bitches don't, I mean, Condoleezza Rice runs around the country like a chicken with its head cut off. How many times has she gone to Israel? How much has she accomplished? Nothing. Zero. What has this woman accomplished in her tenure as Secretary of State? Absolutely nothing. Which is, that's another one of my bulletins for you. The other one is, water is wet. Nobody in the Bush administration has accomplished anything of a positive nature. It's all been death, destruction, devaluation, tear it down, stomp it into the ground. So, the New York Daily News sums it up this way, quote, so much for President Bush leaving office with Mideast peace as his legacy. But the Jewish Telegraph, very succinctly, very to the point, Ehud Olmert will urge President Bush to attack Iran, an Israeli newspaper reported, yada, yada, yada. Israel has hinted that it could resort to force to deny its arch foe the bomb, but targets in Iran may be too numerous, distant, and fortified for the Jewish state to take on alone. So here we go. All right, those are the three preludes to what I want to share with you when we come back, and that is the article from Radar Magazine titled The Last Roundup. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us if you're still there. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. All right, having spent the last hour with these three convergent stories, at least they're convergent to me, the removal of the top civilian and top military leaders of the United States Air Force for reasons that Secretary of Defense Gates said involved essentially what he said, dereliction of duty. The Senate Intelligence Committee releasing the report on the lies told to the United States and the world by Bush and Cheney on the alleged casus belli of regarding Iraq, and the fact that Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is working George W. Bush over to get him to begin an attack on Iran. Now comes this. And by the way, let me just add before I get this started, an attack on Iran would force into play all sorts of mischief in this country, mischief conducted by the federal government in response to what I assume would be demonstrations against that war. Ketchum's article, the guy who wrote it is Christopher Ketchum. It's entitled The Last Roundup, Is the Government Compiling a secret list of citizens to detain under martial law? Ketchum's article begins with James Comey. Remember him? John Ashcroft's second in command at the Department of Justice. Comey testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee months ago about a clandestine operation so secret even he wasn't allowed to name it or even describe what it did. Shortly before the certification deadline of this mysterious operation, John Ashcroft developed pancreatitis, making James Comey the acting attorney general. And Comey, at that particular moment, chose not to certify the program, not to put the stamp of the attorney general's office on this program. And as you know, hours before that program's authorization was to run out, excuse me, Ashcroft was in intensive care at George Washington Hospital. Apparently, at the orders of Bush, the White House tried, in Comey's words, quote, to take advantage of a very sick man, end quote, and sent then Chief of Staff, he still is, Andrew Card, isn't he, and White House counsel, now disgraced Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, into Ashcroft's hospital room to force this heavily drugged attorney general to override the acting attorney general, James Comey's order not to certify the program. So Comey heard about this, raced off to the hospital, and literally ran up the hospital stairs to beat them there. Within minutes, Gonzalez and Card arrived with an envelope filled with the requisite forms. Ashcroft did not cooperate. He looked at these two goofs and said, quote, I'm not the attorney general. There, he said, pointing to Comey, is the attorney general. End quote. Gonzalez and Card were furious, and they left. And the next day, the classified domestic spying program went forward at the demand of the White House, quote, without a signature from the Department of Justice attesting as to its legality, end quote, according to the testimony of acting attorney general at the time, James Comey. Now, from the article. What was the mysterious program that had so alarmed Mr. Comey? 2 months after Comey's testimony to Congress, the New York Times reported a tantalizing detail. The program that prompted him to threaten resignation involved computer searches through massive electronic databases. The larger mystery remained intact, however. Quote, it is not known precisely why searching the databases or data mining raised such a furious legal debate. End quote. That was what was in the New York Times article. Another clue came from a rather unexpected source, George Bush himself. Addressing the nation from the Oval Office in 2005 after the first disclosure of the NSA's warrantless electronic surveillance became public, Bush insisted that the spying program in question was reviewed, quote, every 45 days, end quote, as part of planning to assess threats to, quote, the continuity of our government, end quote. Few Americans, professional journalists included, know anything about so-called continuity of government, or COG, C-O-G, continuity of government programs. So it's no surprise that Bush's passing reference received almost no attention. Continuity of government resides in a nebulous legal realm encompassing national security plans that would trigger the takeover of the country by extra-constitutional forces and effectively suspend the republic. In short, it's a roadmap for martial law. Now, according to a senior government official who served with high-level security clearances in five administrations, quote, there exists a database of Americans who, often for the slightest and most trivial of reason, are considered unfriendly and who, in a time of panic, might be incarcerated. The database can identify and locate perceived enemies of the state, so-called, almost instantaneously. End quote. Now he, this government official, and other sources tell Radar Magazine that the database is sometimes referred to by the code name Main Core. Main Core. One knowledgeable source claims that 8 million Americans are now listed in Main Core as potentially suspect. So in the event of a national emergency, these people could be subjected to everything from heightened surveillance and tracking to direct questioning and possibly detention. Of course, federal law is somewhat vague as to what might constitute a so-called national emergency. Executive orders issued over the past three decades define it as, quote, a natural disaster, military attack, or technological or other emergency, end quote, while Department of Defense documents include eventualities like, quote, riots, acts of violence, insurrections, unlawful obstructions or assemblages, and disorder prejudicial to public law and order, end quote. According to one news report, even national opposition to U.S. military invasion abroad, national opposition to a U.S. military invasion abroad could be a trigger for martial law. In the late 1980s, the Austin American Statesman newspaper and other publications reported the existence of 10 detention camp sites on military facilities nationwide, where hundreds of thousands of people could be held in the event of domestic political upheaval. More of these facilities were commissioned in 2006 when Kellogg Brown & Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, was handed a $385 million contract to establish what was called, quote, temporary detention and processing capabilities, end quote, for the Department of Homeland Security. The contract is short on details, stating only that the facilities would be used for, quote, an emergency influx of immigrants or to support the rapid development of new programs, end quote. And just what those new programs might be is not specified. A host of publicly disclosed programs, sources say, now supply data to Maine Corps. Remember, Maine Corps. That's where so many of us are probably, electronically speaking, now residing. Most notable are the NSA domestic surveillance programs initiated in the wake of 9/11, typically referred to in press reports as, quote, warrantless wiretapping, end quote. The following information seems to be fair game for collection without a warrant. The email addresses you send to and receive from, the subject lines of those messages, the phone numbers you dial, the numbers that dial into your line, and the duration of the calls, the internet sites you visit, and the keywords in your web searches, the destinations of the airline tickets you buy, the amounts and locations of your ATM withdrawals, and the goods and services you purchase on credit cards. All of this information is archived on government supercomputers and, according to sources, also fed into the Maine Corps database. Mark your places. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy.
Give a cheer, get your souvenir. People running around in circles.
Reality radio for a rational world. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour.
Everybody,
so let's recap just a few lines here and then back into this. The information now, it's certain, the information that these massive mainframe computers contain can include the email addresses. This is all done without a warrant. The email addresses you send and receive, the subject lines of those messages, the phone numbers you dial, the numbers that dial you, the durations of the calls, the internet sites you visit, keywords in your web searches, destinations of the airline tickets you buy, the amount and location of your ATM withdrawals, what you buy on your credit cards, all this information archived on government supercomputers and, according to sources, also fed into the so-called Maine Corps databases. Now, continuing with the Radar Magazine article, Maine Corps also allegedly draws on four smaller databases that in turn call from federal, state, and local so-called intelligence reports. They also get information from print and broadcast media, financial records, commercial databases, and unidentified so-called private sector entities. Additional information comes from a database known as the Terror Identities Data Mart Environment, TIDE, which generates watch lists from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence for use by airlines, law enforcement, and border posts. According to the Washington Post, the terrorist identities list has quadrupled in size between 2003 and 2007 to include about 500,000 names. The FBI's Terrorist Screening Center border crossing list which listed 755,000 people as of fall of 2007, grows by 200,000 names a year. And a former NSA officer tells Radar that the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, using an electronic funds transfer surveillance program, also contributes data to Maine Corps, as does a Pentagon program that was created in 2002 to monitor anti-war protesters and environmental activists such as Greenpeace. Now, if previous FEMA and FBI lists are any indication, the Maine Corps database includes dissidents and activists of various stripes, political protesters, tax protesters, lawyers, professors, publishers, journalists, gun owners, illegal aliens, foreign nationals, and a great many other harmless, average people. If Maine Corps does exist, says Philip Giraldi, a former CIA counterterrorism officer and an outspoken critic of the agency, then the Department of Homeland Security is its likely home, Maine Corps. Giraldi says, quote, if a master list is being compiled, it would have to be in a place where there are no legal issues. You see, the CIA and FBI would be restricted by oversight and accountability laws. Giraldi says, so I suspect it's at Department of Homeland Security, which, as far as I know, operates with no such restraints, end quote. Giraldi notes that Department of Homeland Security already maintains a central list of suspected terrorists and has been freely adding people who pose no threat to domestic security. Giraldi continues, quote, it's clear the DHS has the mandates for controlling and owning master lists. The process is not transparent, and the criteria for getting on the lists are not clear. I am certain, he adds, that the content of such a master list, like Maine Corps, would not be carefully vetted, and there would be many names on it for many reasons, quite likely, including the two of us. And by that I mean you, Truth Seeker, and me. In July 2007, and again last August, Representative Peter DeFazio, a Democrat from Oregon and a senior member of the House Homeland Security Committee, sought access to the so-called classified annexes of the Bush administration's COG, Continuity of Government Program. DeFazio's interest was prompted by Homeland Security Presidential Directive 20, also known as NSPD 51. There you are. Issued in May 2007, which reserves for the executive branch the sole authority in deciding what constitutes a national emergency and to determine when the emergency is over. DeFazio found this unnerving. Homeland Security Presidential Directive 20. A lot of you folks who know about this refer to it as National Presidential Directive 51. And that's the one that says it's now time for martial law. More when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stopping still. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going well, the weather suits my clothes.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
26 before the hour. So recapping here, the last couple of lines. Last July, and again in August, Democrat Peter DeFazio, representative from Oregon and a senior member of the House Homeland Security Committee, wanted access to the so-called classified annexes of the Bush administration's COG, Continuity of Government Program. He wanted to know what's in there. His interest was prompted by Homeland Security Presidential Directive 20, also known as NSPD 51, that was issued in May of last year, which reserves for the executive branch the sole authority to decide what constitutes a national emergency and to determine when that emergency is over. And DeFazio found all this just a tad unnerving. Continuing, but he and other leaders of the Homeland Security Committee, including Chairman Benny Thompson, a Mississippi Democrat, were denied a review of those continuity of government so-called classified annexes. To this day, their calls for disclosure have been ignored by the White House. In a press release issued last August, Congressman DeFazio went public with his concerns that the NSPD 51 continuity of government plans are, quote, extra-constitutional or unconstitutional. And around the same time, he told the Oregonian newspaper, quote, maybe the people who think there's a conspiracy out there are right, end quote. Congress itself has recently widened the path for both extra-constitutional detentions by the White House and the domestic use of military force during a national emergency. Congress has done this. The Military Commissions Act of 2006 effectively suspended habeas corpus and freed up the executive branch to designate any American citizen as, quote, an enemy combatant, end quote, and thereby forfeiting all privileges accorded under the Bill of Rights. Let me repeat that. The Military Commissions Act of 2006 effectively suspended habeas corpus and freed up the executive branch to designate any American citizen an enemy combatant, and therefore forfeiting all rights accorded under the Bill of Rights. The John Warner National Defense Authorization Act, also passed in 2006, included a last-minute rider entitled Use of the Armed Forces in Major Public Emergencies, which allowed the deployment of U.S. military units not to put down domestic insurrections, not only, as permitted under Posse Comitatus and the Insurrection Act of 1807, but also, it is now legal to deal using the United States military with a wide range of calamities, including natural disaster, epidemic, or other serious public health emergency, terrorist attack, or incident. More troubling, in 2002, Congress authorized funding for the U.S. Northern Command, or NORTHCOM, which, according to Washington Post military intelligence expert William Arkin, quote, allows for emergency military operations in the United States without civilian supervision or control. End quote. Bruce Fein, constitutional lawyer and former Reagan administration official, says the following, quote, we are at the edge of a cliff and we're about to fall off. To a national emergency planner, he writes, everybody looks like a danger to stability. There's no doubt that Congress would have the authority to denounce all this. For example, to refuse to appropriate money for the preparation of the list of U.S. citizens to be detained in the event of martial law. But Congress is the invertebrate branch. They say, we have to be cautious. The same old crap, Bruce Fein writes, that you associate with cowards. None of this will change under a Democratic administration unless you have exceptional statesmanship and the courage to stand up and say, you know, democracies accept certain risks that tyrannies do not. End quote, Bruce Fein. Meanwhile, the mystery of James Comey's testimony before the Senate has disappeared in the morass of election year coverage. none of the leading presidential candidates has been asked the question or the questions that are so profoundly pertinent to the future of this country. Questions like, as president, will you continue aggressive domestic surveillance programs in the vein of the Bush administration? Will you release the continuity of government blueprints that Representative DeFazio and Thompson were not allowed to read? What does it suggest about the state of the nation that the United States is now ranked by worldwide civil liberties groups as, quote, an endemic surveillance society, end quote, alongside repressive regimes such as China and Russia? Well, we know at least one presidential candidate has made his position known. McCain said recently that he'd spy on Americans secretly, too. He said, quote, if elected president, or he didn't say this, but in the article at Wired.com, if elected president, McCain said he would reserve the right to run his own warrantless wiretapping program against Americans based on the theory that the president's wartime powers trump federal criminal statutes and court oversight. That's according to a statement released by his campaign. Now, our good friend Bob Alexander adds this postscript. So what are we going to do about this? What can we do? There are 304 million Americans, and they think 8 million of us are suspects. If Bush declares a state of emergency, millions of Americans will be targeted. Because of the laws and signing statements these thugs have come up with since they took power, the emergency can be anything Bush says it is. We'll never know. A setback in Iraq, or maybe just a bad hair day. We'll never know. What will they do to us? A letter in the mail or a phone call requiring us to come down to the local government office, a knock on the door from local or federal officials wanting to have a little chat. A squad of Marines busting down the door. Or maybe we'll end up being welcomed to our new Kellogg Brown and Root home. I'm the first to admit, Bob writes, that I know very little about what to do in case the government takes off the gloves. Like most Americans, I only know what to do in situations I haven't experienced because of what I've seen in the movies. In the case of a zombie uprising, shoot them in the head! Other than that limited scenario, I'm clueless about what to do if the government goes all repressive on our collective asses. I think that for most of us, the reaction would be to get indignant. Not good. We've all seen that the indignant character in a disaster movie is usually the first to go. Indignant guy. I demand to see my lawyer. Bang. And, of course, unless you're Dirty Harry or Rambo, never argue with guys with guns. To end on a more optimistic note, if the detention centers were built as shoddily as the KBR Halliburton building projects in Iraq, they might be pretty easy to escape from. All we have to do is just sneak past the Blackwater guy in the guard tower and his 50 caliber machine gun. So there you have it, truth seeker. All of our careful show preparation today, such as it was, more or less blown away by the firing of the two top Air Force commanders, one civilian and one military. The release of the Senate Intelligence Committee report that Cheney and Bush lied. How many more people have to tell this? How many more books? I mean, Scott McClellan's weaselly little book just came out. Lies, all lies. Richard Clark, former national security. What was he in? Was he national security advisor? Lies, all lies. The Valerie Plame case, where it was made very clear. Lies, all lies. These are high crimes. These are felonies against the United States of America. And nothing, not a goddamn thing is being done to impeach, get the record out there, let the Republicans in the Senate go on the record of not voting for conviction. And then as soon as these bastards are out of office, if they're ever out of office, a full investigation by the next president, a Democrat, that will result in their arrest and their presentation before an international war crimes tribunal organization somewhere on this planet, somewhere where the rule of law still applies. We'll take your phone calls when we come back. The number here is 800-989-1480. And for the rest of the program, so jump in and join us if you are still there. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
And the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before. Where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who send the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interests.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
You know, it is very unnerving to, if we believe the rumors, and I think they're very self-serving, that the only thing standing between Dick Cheney launching an attack, nuclear or otherwise, on Iran is Condoleezza Rice. Oh, please. Please. To your phone calls, starting with Scott, who is in Philadelphia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how you doing there, Mike?
I'm all right.
I'm not too bad either. Mildly apprehensive, I'd say. You've done some talk about martial law here, and what I wanted to know was, what does, you know, citizens of the U.S. should we expect if they declare martial law? Could you give us like a brief overview of what we might expect?
Well, one of the first things would be to divide the country into grids, and in order to leave the grid in which you live, you would either need a special pass or permit that you would have to get well in advance from some local government office. That would be probably number two. Number one would be the confiscation of all guns with... Are you in a shower? Is it raining there?
No, I'm in a truck. I'm on my way to Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. That's the sound of you. Okay. Probably the first order of business under martial law, not probably, definitely, would be the confiscation of all weapons that are in public hands. And there would have to be some sort of penalty because a lot of us would say, screw that, I'm not going to do it. So there would probably be... some sort of penalty attached to that, like you go to prison or to a detention center. So dividing the country into zones or grids and then special permission to leave your grid, there would probably, I'm sure, be no-fly rules instituted. There would be very heavy restrictions on travel. If you want to know really what it would be like, just read something about the Soviet Union circa the late 60s, early 70s. They were in a constant state of martial law, even worse, with their neighborhood surveillance systems where children were reporting on parents who had politically incorrect conversations, even if they were whispered at midnight in the parents' bedroom. So confiscation of weapons, restriction on travel, those are the first two big things. Also would be the suspension of the so-called Bill of Rights, first 10 amendments to the Constitution, no right to a fair trial, no right to assemble, no free press, Rules would be issued saying more than two or three people together in one spot would require a special permit issued by a government. All of this has been done. It's been done, not in this country, but it's the model is any totalitarian state, whether it's extreme left or extreme right. The models are out there. Take a look at China over the past 10 years, how every time some social or civic organization starts to develop in that sad country, it's immediately disbanded and its leaders are jailed. I'm thinking right away of the Falun Gong organization, which is nothing more than an organization that believes in collective Tai Chi exercises. But they don't recognize necessarily the astute leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. So therefore, they are immediately suspects. So all sorts of things. Loyalty oaths would be required. A declaration that you are free and clear of any sort of subversive thought. Constant surveillance. And then the one biggie in when martial law is declared is military checkpoints set up all over the place. Because remember, taking weapons away from the citizens and restricting travel, those are the two immediate and primary and foremost objectives of martial law.
I can't even imagine a time where a tank and soldiers would be marching down my street, but that's
well,
a very real possibility, isn't it?
Well, it has happened. I mean, it's happened in this country, in Chicago in 68. It's happened in instances where state school boards refused to allow integrated schools. Eisenhower called out the military. Truman called out the military to stop a steel strike. Johnson called out the military. Nixon called out the military. It's happened many times. It's just been whenever this has happened, the American public has sort of sat back and said, well, you know, the protesters got out of line, or, well, you know, the Negroes ought to know their place and not try to go to the white schools, or, you know, the anti-war protesters really don't know what they're talking about. And of course, we have to have law and order. Think Kent State, 1970, when four American students were shot. Well, not necessarily students, but four American young people were shot dead by the Ohio National Guard that had been federalized by Dick Nixon simply because those students were protesting a war. So it has happened before. Think of Jackson State University, at the same time, where two students were shot dead for protesting the war in Vietnam. So this is not an event that has never occurred in this country in immediate recent history. It's been very immediate. And Oliver North, back in the 80s, during the reign of Ronald Reagan, Oliver North and John Poindexter and so many people who are now the underpinnings of this corrupt administration, Elliot Abrams, they all put together a plan to lock up Americans in these detention centers back then. Had the U.S. decided, and we were very close to making this decision, had the U.S. decided to invade Nicaragua, the feeling was that there would be enough of a protest by American citizens that they would have to be locked up and martial law declared. So trust me on this. None of this is new, Scott. It's just that it's never really been put into effect where an order was issued that the United States of America is now under martial law. On the other hand, there's never been anything like this Presidential Directive number 51 that gave absolute power to the people who are running George Bush. Thanks, Scott. Take it easy. We'll be back after the break, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Like a drunk in the middle. midnight choir.
Welcome back, 7 past the hour. A couple of quick emails here and then on to your phone calls. Barry writes, regarding what would happen if martial law were declared in this country, the question that came from the caller, Barry writes, first thing would be to shut off the Internet, and they're already working on that. They can shut the whole Internet off in a matter of hours. That stops much of the shows like yours from getting transmitted across the IP stream as well. The telecoms have already shown they wouldn't hesitate to do whatever the White House tells them to do. Regards, Barry. Yeah, I left that one out because I'm just not thinking clearly. And I don't know if you heard on the news, our little AP newscast during the breaks. If you're listening via the Internet, you probably heard it. Otherwise, you hear whatever station or network you're listening this program on, whatever news they provide. But the bill to wire the country, make a wireless access to the Internet across the country has been stopped. Now, to me, that's ominous. Because a technologically advanced society that wants to increase not just communication, but the transference of information to assist in startup businesses, to diversify the population in terms of where we all live, all of that stuff. You know, how many people have just had their guts full of living packed into cities and would love to get the hell out if they had the kind of access they need in order to run whatever kind of a business they're in, telecommuting, so on and so forth. It makes great sense to provide wireless Internet access across the country. But all of a sudden, the bill to, I just heard that on tonight's news, a bill to begin that process has been stopped. Why? One more thing here. excuse me. This is from January 2007. So this is about a year and a half ago at Huffington Post. Arianna Huffington wrote it. She was at a brunch preceding Nancy Pelosi's formal swearing-in as Speaker of the House, and she ran into General Wesley Clark. And she writes, Clark was really angry about what he'd read in a column by UPI editor-at-large Arno de Borchgrave. Is that how you say that? In the piece, which Clark forwarded to me, referring to Arianna Huffington, de Borchgrave details Benjamin Netanyahu's leading the charge to lobby the Bush administration to take out Iran's nuclear facilities, and describes U.S. airstrikes against Iran in 2007 or 2008 at the latest as, quote, an all-but-done deal. Now, this is a year and a half ago. And today, since no strike occurred, yesterday, Ehud Olmert is grinding on chuckle nuts to get him to do just that. Clark told Arianna Huffington, quote, how can you talk about bombing a country when you won't even talk to them? It's outrageous. We're the United States of America. We don't do that. Don't get me wrong, Clark said. I'm not saying the military option is off the table, but diplomacy is not what Jim Baker says it is, referring to his approach, I guess. It's not what will it take for you boys to support us on Iraq. It's sitting down for a couple of days and talking about our families and our hopes and building relationships. End quote. And when we asked him what made him so sure the Bush administration was headed in this direction, an attack on Iran, he replied, quote, you just have to read what's in the Israeli press. He said later, quote, I'm worried about the surge, but I'm worried even more about this. So it's not that this is brand new. I mean, anybody who's been paying attention knows that the push by the neocons in this government, especially this psychopathic Dick Cheney, and the neocons in Israel, and probably some in the UK, have been pushing for this kind of action now for a couple of years. Take out Iran, as though it's a weed in your backyard. You know, those quasi-military or law enforcement expressions that have somehow crept into common language, like to take someone down or take something out, they just grind on me. And the other thing, as far as a gun grab, it was amazing to me back during the presidential primary or the presidential election in 2000, how the nutballs in Tennessee and West Virginia convinced the other nutballs that if Al Gore were elected, he would snatch the guns. And as it turned out, it was Bush ordering Blackwater into New Orleans after the catastrophe there with the primary objective, snatch the guns. So I'm going to use the term, you dumbasses who have been whining and bleating and acting like a bunch of freaks about liberals or Democrats taking your guns, you jackasses. It's never been liberals who tried to take your guns. What have liberals done? They've tried to restrict you from having a goddamn cannon in your house or an M50 tank or a 50 caliber sniper rifle. Nobody has ever tried to take your guns. That's a Democrat or a liberal. Gun registration, yeah. Don't forget Adolf Hitler, who's a hero to some of you nutcases. The first thing he did was grab the guns. So anybody in this country, who in the United States, who thinks that a Democrat or a progressive or a liberal, we don't like guns, but it's the Republicans, the conservatives, the neo-Nazis, the corporatists who say to you, uh-uh, can't have them. You don't believe that? That's because you're a fool. That's why. That's because you've drunk the Kool-Aid from these right-wing nutcases, these shills for corporate America, like Hannity, like Bortz, like Limbaugh, this whole pantheon of right-wing mouthpieces who have been telling you for 10 or 12 years now who the enemy is. You dumbasses, they are the enemy. But no, you've said, oh, Rush, what do we do? Oh, I know, let's have Operation Chaos. What do you think that will do, you monkeys? Did Rush also tell you that Operation Chaos that he's pushing? I want to see cars overturned and on fire in Denver. That's what I want to see. I want to see Chicago 68. Did Rush also tell you about NSPD 51? Did he? Or did he leave that part out? You fools. You Rush, you ditto heads. You people are really crazy. You're the ones who are responsible for what this Bush crime family has done. Because you have allowed the softening up process for the past 10 or 15 years via talk radio by absolute totalitarians, Nazis, like Hannity, like Bortz, like Limbaugh, like the rest of these bastards. You've allowed yourself, your brain, to be just absolutely reversed, completely turned around. They speak for the enemy. They represent totalitarianism. They want to see oppression because it won't affect them, they think. And you right-wing radio listeners, you've had your ability to tell the truth or to smell the truth absolutely removed from you. You can't even do it anymore. Jesus, you make me sick. Plus the fact that over that period of time, you all have acted like a bunch of goddamn cowards, just little pansy-ass cowards. Every time these people have run the color-coded terror alert on you, you've all wet your pants and go, oh, what do we do now, Rush? Well, here it is, you big old brave right-wingers. You find a liberal and hide behind him because we are armed.
People need everyone to lock to lock.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls. Bob is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Michael Malloy. How are you tonight?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
You gave me a little flash of insight tonight when you mentioned Condoleezza Rice, and her statement sounded like a vice presidential candidate to me. It was attacking Obama's, you know, let's talk.
Right, right.
Everybody.
Right, right.
And strategic move going for the disaffected Democratic women.
Yeah, but I can't see John McCain taking on Condoleezza Rice as a running mate. But you know, who knows? Maybe
yeah,
he will.
You may be right. At least she's a supporting actress, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that.
This is a movement, Mike. This is the movement. It must be. You know, but this is the 21st century.
Yeah.
In 1961, I was arrested as civil rights sit-in, and that's when my political activism began. And it's steady. It's been going through, but we're not out in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the stadiums. In these arenas, Obama is bringing out more people. And with his anti-war stance and his anti-corporate stance.
Right, right.
You know what he just did was took on the corporations. He took the Democratic Party off the corporate payroll.
Well, it's my understanding that what he decided, and then the DNC, of course, sent out a press release tonight, almost sounding as though it were their idea, when I believe it was Barack Obama's idea, that they would no longer take lobbyist money. Now, sometimes you have to look at the statement a little bit more closely than they want us to. It didn't say anything about taking money that I'm aware of. I haven't read the whole statement. It didn't say anything about not taking money from corporate interests or from political action committees. What it said was it would no longer take money from lobbyists.
Well, I know that's the case for sure, but they're all busy over in the McCain bus anyway. But I heard that PACs were included.
Well, I hope that's the case.
I do too. But it sounds like people power to me. You know, you were talking about softening up and martial law, and I think it'll be after Thanksgiving. It'll be around Thanksgiving.
You think it'll be that late?
Yes, because I think they're going with the McCain, and if it can't work, if they can't steal it again like they did the last two, then they'll go that way. But if they can just keep tightening the noose on people, my God, this is chilly. This is 9/11 all over again, but 9/11, 1973. This is the economic noose is tightening on us. The gas prices, food prices, trucks. You know, they're one of the ways that they established martial law is to eliminate independent truckers so the people can't have their own support system. And that seems to be going on for the last few months. I really feel for our brothers that are out on the highways.
And
this Thanksgiving, you told a wonderful story about taking your daughter to see the Christmas lights. And I realized, I have kin down in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
That I go to Thanksgiving for and Christmas. And when I drove this year, I drive about 75 miles.
Mm-hmm.
All along this way, there were about, I'd like to say, a hundredth of the lights up for Christmas by Thanksgiving that there usually were. People are usually putting up lights before Thanksgiving.
Right.
And when Christmas came, there were only two or three gaudy displays where there used to be about 10 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
There were just very few, and I just think it's the economic noose that is they have sold us out, robbed us blind. Talk about the Brinks train robbery.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. All right, Bob, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Brennan is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Brennan, welcome to the program.
Hey, wow.
Hey.
He caught me off guard.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was. I know you guys got a little bit of lag there between. I was listening to that guy, and then so I didn't realize quite how it worked.
Yeah.
Hey. Well, I can't believe you're. Thank God, man. I mean, there's nowhere you can turn that you are literally getting. We're in a corner. We're in a corner. We're not going to start hearing about this on CNN. We're not going to be hearing about it anywhere. The masses of people out there, they have this figured out. They have very, very smart people. Whatever you think of Bush and what have you, they have very smart people on their side that have figured all of this out. It's going to take, if there's any chance whatsoever, of people like me hearing someone like you and talking to somebody else. And, I mean, even that's kind of a shot in the dark. I mean, we're talking about whistleblower stuff. That's kind of where I'm at right
now.
Hey,
can you hold on, Brennan?
Sure.
All right, let me put you on hold. We'll come back right after the break and pick it up there. Stay with us. Break here. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Defining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
Before the hour, we were talking with Brennan in Phoenix. Let's go back to Brennan listening on KPHX. All right, where were we?
Thanks, Mike. Hey, I appreciate you coming back to me, brother.
Sure.
We're doing it live. You know, it's a little jab at O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Man, we're probably at the most critical time. I mean, this is a great experiment that we're doing here. You know, most citizens have a real short view of history. You know, I mean, it's just so much to keep your attention and Dancing with the Stars. But, mm-hmm. I mean, this experiment hasn't quite succeeded yet. We're still looking for the final outcome. And that's why this moment right here is so critical. I mean, can centralized economic power have its way with, you know, the greatest experiment in democracy in the world yet? And I'm afraid it's not looking good right now.
No, it isn't.
I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
What's that?
I said no, it isn't.
Yeah, and that's why what I think now, what I think is the greatest thing, the greatest likelihood of our getting our butts saved is a whistleblower. Mm-hmm. Somewhere out there. Is someone working in some laboratory, some office, somewhere that, like, let's say Mike McClellan, let's just give him the benefit of the doubt for a second. I know where you're coming from on that. But someone that, oh, really, they really mean well, and the terrorists are really bad. But somewhere in the back of their mind, they're thinking, you know what, this is wrong. This is one step too far, and I can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
They could come forward, go to some, I mean, you know, who knows what would happen, but short of something, that's what it's going to take at this point. They've got their ground game so well played out. I mean, he's got all the cards as it is right now. He could decide tomorrow, oh, there was an earthquake, and let's have martial law. Oh, there's some protesters, deploy the, you know, the agents and take them into custody, and I'm certainly in deep court for this.
I hear you.
But, I mean, if there's someone out there that's listening, and this is kind of what I'm thinking, Someone out there's got a guilty conscience. Someone knows what's going on. Someone knows something about the plan for Iran, and there's something they can do, like the whistleblowers for Enron or something like that, or Deep Throat or somebody like that. Somebody that can do something.
Okay, I get where you're going with this, Brennan, right. but the thing you've got to keep in mind is, I think you have to keep in mind, that the inner circle that has been talking about, seriously talking about, a full-scale attack on Iran is a small circle. It includes people in the Likud government in Israel and people in the Bush crime family here. And remember, nothing leaked. Nothing ever leaks from either. Maybe from the Israelis, because they don't have quite the totalitarian setup where it concerns the press in Israel as we do here. But nothing leaks out of the Bush crime family. When it does leak, it usually comes out in the form of a book. So I just wouldn't count on a so-called whistleblower or somebody making a righteous declaration that results in exposing these bastards. The people who are involved in the war planning, the attack on Iran, are never going to let it leak out. And you and I will know about it probably once the missiles are launched. And that's how it'll be conducted, with missiles. Brennan, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Pat is calling from Tempe, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Pat. Hey, Pat.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're on. Hi, Pat.
I can't believe this. Okay, I'm going to talk fast to start with because I don't want, to take up less time. But I have been listening to you since Air America, I ever heard of Air America was coming on, from Mel Franken on TV, and I listened from day one to you. I'm like your biggest, I'm another Marge, is my opinion. But Marge gets through and I don't. I never have been able to get through. But I'm your age. And do you remember, when K-Phoenix was shut down, our radio station was shut down,
yeah,
I gave them $1,000 just because I can't live without Mike Malloy. And that's a lot of money to me.
Well, it's a lot of money to anybody.
Anyway, I've never done anything like that before. But anyway, I got you back. But anyway, what I want to tell you is that I lived through, you remember that you're my age, so you remember the Detroit race riot, right?
Now when you say
now,
race,
it was big national news.
Now wait.
60-something.
Okay, wait. Stop. Take a breath. Take a breath. When you say race riot.
R-A-C-E, riot.
Okay,
riot.
Now wait. Stop.
That's what they called it on the news. I want to tell you what it's like.
Pat, you really have to hold on a second. You've got to get a grip, okay?
I want to tell you about martial law.
Okay, you got to get
on your side. Pat, I'm not against racism.
Pat, please, I'm begging you.
Okay.
Get a grip.
Okay.
All right. Now, when you say race riot, the only time there have ever been race riots are when whites have attacked blacks. A. B. If you're referring to...
See, it's not what
if,
I'm
if,
calling,
if you're,
Mike.
If you're referring to...
I want you to remember.
If you're, oh, Christ. If you're referring to what happened in Detroit and about 40 other cities after the assassination of MLK, are you?
No.
All right, what are you talking about?
Okay, I'm not saying it was their fault. All I'm trying to tell you, I have plenty of black friends. There's nothing right. I have been an Obama girl. I'm too old to be called a girl, but I've been with Obama since day one. Anyway, I just want to tell you what it's like to live through martial law. That's all I want to tell you. I was living in Farmington Hills with my three children. I took my children in the car to Detroit to visit my girlfriend, and it was just a regular day. So I was at her house. And the 6 o'clock news came on, and Detroit, it comes on at 6. Here it comes on at 5. But anyway, they said, there is martial law proclaimed. And we're both going, what? What are you talking about? And the Detroit news says, stay in your homes. They have declared martial law. And that's what they said. So me and my girlfriend thought we'd go outside and see if we can see anything different, whatever, curious. I was a lot younger. And left the kids in the house, of course. Anyway, they had turned out all the street lights in Detroit, and she lived about 10 houses from the big street, a very big street, main thoroughfare. So me and her walked up to the corner in the dark, and I heard whoosh, 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 whoosh. We were surrounded by cars and guns, big, long guns were pointed at our heads, and I'm not kidding. Those guns were like an inch away from my head, and I was surrounded, my whole body encircled me with guns. And they said, what are you doing out? And we said, we didn't know what was happening. Please, I mean, we just didn't know what was happening. My tanks were going down the streets of Detroit. We couldn't go get milk. We couldn't go get groceries. Me and my kids were stuck at her house for I don't remember how many days because I've got problems with memory now. But I don't remember how many days we were there, but we were stuck in, at her house for days, me and my children, because we couldn't leave the house to get milk. We couldn't do anything. And martial law was a lot worse than you just made it sound. I'm telling you, I never thought I'd live to see the day.
Okay,
like
all right.
Tanks going down her at her corner.
Okay, all right. Well, I've got you, Pat. I understand, and I appreciate what you had to say. And as far as actually living under a state of emergency, I don't know that it was martial law in Detroit or not. But you're very descriptive of it, and fine, that's all well and good. It's just that I question what you meant, and you wouldn't allow me to get the question out. I was just checking with you what you meant by race riot. That's a pretty inflammatory term, and I think it is fair to say that the only real race riots in this country have been whites butchering black people. And it's happened many times, but that's not what occurred in 1968. That was not a race riot. I'm sorry. I'm sure it scared the hell out of you, and it would have scared me. But it was. I'm not trying to be picky here on your terms, but I think when we talk about acts of violence, we've got to be sure that we are using the right terms. That's all. That's just very important. I honestly believe that. So, no offense, Pat. It was very astute observation on your part. Yes, it's very frightening to have military vehicles go by with bristling with guns. I understand. But I have to disagree with you about the term race riot. Okay? Okay. That's the only point I was trying to make. The only point I was trying to make. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The World Bank System, Mexico. We'll cut you off if you don't keep your taxes low. But they have no right to wield that sword. Because they take their orders from the chairman of the board. IMF, WTO. I hear these words just every place I go. Who are these people? Who elected them? And how do I replace them with some of my friends? Can you believe I'm listening? No power without accountability. Can you believe I'm
It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew tonight, Ian Huff, who engineered the program, Billy Foster, technical director, Bob Alexander, Ben Birch, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. I've gotten a couple of emails tonight from people who are suggesting, that's all, suggesting that the firings today by Secretary of Defense Gates of Air Force Secretary Michael Wynn and Air Force Chief of Staff General Michael Mosley, at the firing of those two guys, one military, one civilian, which is highly unusual move to make, has more to do with what they perhaps refused to do rather than what they have been accused of doing. I tend to disagree with that. I don't think that these guys were let go because they refused to sign on to the attack Iran plan. To the contrary, if there was some issue about attacking Iran, I think these two would probably be very much in favor of it. The civilian head of the army is from General Dynamics, isn't he? One of the major war profiteers. And the other one, Air Force Chief of Staff General Michael Mosley, unless I have the wrong information, is somewhat of a Christian religious fanatic who would just as soon go ahead and bomb everything and in order to please Jesus. So I'm not saying that Gates is unwilling to participate in war planning, but since Gates is not of this Bush cabal, he is Gates comes from the James Baker generation. It comes from George Herbert Walker Bush. George Herbert Walker Bush was not interested in, I don't believe, in global thermonuclear war, whereas his addled psycho son and his addled psycho son's vice president are. I think one of the reasons that Gates wound up as Secretary of Defense is because the elders in the Bush crime family, the ones who want to continue to milk the planet for all it's worth, and you can't do that when the planet is suffering through nuclear winter or has become a little ball of ash. I think they are the ones who insisted that Rumsfeld get his ass out of town, and they put this guy in, Robert Gates. So I understand the sentiment behind your emails about whether or not, you know, look what happened to Admiral Fallon, you know, who was cashiered because he refused to, according to reliable press reports, he refused in the military, he refused to, number one, order that third carrier group, battle group, into the Persian Gulf, and number two, had made a couple of statements about as long as he was in command of Pacific Force or the Middle East forces or whatever, that such an attack would never occur. Now, immediately after he tendered his resignation, which I don't believe goes into effect for another couple of weeks, he said that, you know, that attribution was incorrect, that he had never said it. You don't know in this game. None of us really know what's going on. We really don't. You just kind of have to put your faith somewhere, right? Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Joe, welcome to the program.
Mike.
Yeah, Joe.
Yes. Hey, I wanted to call about the nationwide Wi-Fi. Actually, that's something that the FCC wanted to do. They wanted to subcontract it out to a company to provide free internet that would be FCC-regulated and FCC-controlled.
Right, say that again.
I have a problem with that.
Oh, now you have a problem. Say it again. You have a problem with. I missed what. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Say it again.
The free Wi-Fi that they wanted to create the nationwide free Wi-Fi,
right,
that you,
right,
were talking about earlier.
Right.
That was supposed to be through a subcontractor.
Yeah.
And that's going to be FCC regulated and FCC controlled. You know the government wants to get their hands on the internet.
Right.
What would be the best way to do it than to give everybody free Wi-Fi that's ran by the government?
Right. Okay. All right. That's a good point.
I have a problem with that. I wanted to give you something to think about. And also, I was listening to another show, a different show last night, and I'm not going to talk UFOs or any of that crap, but they were talking about this Real ID.
Right.
And from what it does and what the ID cards that they're issuing in Washington so people can get across the border back and forth easy to Canada, they can just stand in front of your house or stand within a half a block of you, wave a little thingy that looks like a radar gun, and see all of your information because it can go right through your purse, right through your wallet, all that stuff. They can get your personal information. And the little thing that they were – you know, people were going to inject into their skins, you know, the tracking thing. The government of Colombia wanted to inject that into all the children to protect the children.
Well, usually so many of these ideas have to do with, protecting the children, when in fact they have nothing to do with children.
So, of course, I know that. Yeah. Just like when after 9/11, they over here in Florida, they wanted to put thumbprint scanners on all the school buses so that all the kids getting on the school buses, they can get their thumbprints.
Yeah, it's just hell, Joe, when ideas that might have some basis in a good idea are misused by organizations, government or otherwise, who are really not interested in protecting anybody, much less a child, but more interested in furthering their particular agenda, which is usually something to do with totalitarianism. So, thanks for participating tonight. I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.